upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Mullet Cast, the podcast where business and pleasure collide. My name is Evan Balmer. Follow me on Instagram at Evan Balmer. Today, we're joined by Steve Mamarella. Steve is the founder and owner of Tech Group. Follow Tech Group online at, or check them out online at techgroup.com. That's TEKGROUP.com. What's going on, Steve?
Not much. Just want to start off saying worst name ever for a company. I started the company 23 years ago, 24 years ago, and I thought I was smart with Tech Group, but I can't tell you how many sales I've lost because people thought it was TECH.
Right.
So that's the way I wanted to start.
Sweet. So basically take everything you say with a grain of salt is what you're saying.
Exactly. I've made it 22 years, but worst name ever.
That's cool. So was it strictly because domain availability, or was it something else?
TECH was not available. We started the company in 1998, and it was myself and my two business partners, and we were the Tech Group at our previous company. And when that company was sold, we kind of started our own, and we were like, oh, we're the Tech Group, let's do Tech Group. But TECH wasn't available. And I mean, we've been called everything from TEK Group to TEKG to, you know, just, it's amazing how you really need to think about your branding and what you see these companies like Sprinklr with it, you know, the companies that don't do the vowels and all that stuff.
Right.
But it's really funny how, I mean, I'm convinced that there's so many people that are like, oh, I went to your website, I couldn't find you, and so then I went with this other company.
Right. I didn't think you guys were too reputable.
I didn't want to go with some people that couldn't spell.
Right. Did you ever have the ability to buy the Tech Group TECH domain over the years? Or is there still a viable company there?
Yeah, we were one of the first in our industry. And so our product, you know, our name just kind of worked. We just started kind of going by Tech and TEK and that kind of thing. So
gotcha.
It didn't impact us as much because we're a B2B software company. Now, if we were a soft drink or something like that, it might have been an issue.
Right. That's cool. All right. So by way of background, let's tell everyone how we met. And I was telling someone this story the other day of like how different things are in the world. Like, you know, how kids find their, like, kids already know who their roommates are in college and stuff, like, because they follow each other on social media. So back, Steve and I were assigned to each other as freshman roommates at Washington and Lee University. And it was literally an index card in the mail that had like a sticker on it with like, you know, one of those address label stickers. And it said, your roommate is, and it was like Stephen Joseph Mamarella. And it had your address and phone number, I think. And so that's how we met originally, was like snail mail followed up by a phone call.
Yeah, it was definitely, I remember it exactly. And I just remember when I saw your address, my dad is from Philly. And he said, oh, when you meet this guy, just ask him what exit he's from. Right. That'll be good. And I was like, yeah, and I remember I said that to you, and you're just like, hey, what's up? What's up? And I was like, what exit? And you're like, what?
The funny thing is like, that's pretty much how my entire college career went. You know, once you start interacting with people from like the South in particular, all that, people are like, yo, Jersey, you know, like the state's name's not New Jersey, it's Yo Jersey. And what exit was like always the question. Which is funny.
One of my first memories for sure.
And I was psyched because I was going, I you know, had lived in Virginia for a couple of years, was going back to Virginia. I'd been a lifelong Redskins fan. And that was like, you know, for me, I was like so psyched to, you know, get back to Redskins country. And then I find out you're an Eagles fan, you know, from Virginia.
It was like opposite, right? You should have been a Philly fan. And I hated the Redskins.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. And then, like, you know, our first priorities are, we were probably a perfect match, because I remember all we were talking about is like, all right, what stereo gear do each of us have, and who's bringing speakers and who's bringing this and that, you know?
Like, yeah, that was number one. CDs.
Right.
What CDs do we got?
Exactly.
One thing that I thought was funny too was our CD collections, there wasn't a lot of overlap.
There really wasn't.
You had your stuff and I had my stuff, and we both kind of liked each other's, but you introduced me to a lot of stuff. Kinks, right? That early Yes, what was that, 90257 or something?
Right.
That Yes album, that was huge. So many, you know, you introduced me to a lot of that McCartney stuff,
right?
Wings,
that was always heavy, like.
Heavy rotation. Uncle Albert.
Nap time music. Put on the Wings' Greatest Hits.
Yeah, exactly.
I know the bands always think about, you definitely had more of a country flavor, so I picked that up. But the one band you were heavy into, 311 earlier, like that's I picked up 311 from you, like bootleg
Fish,
CDs and Fish
and
for
Fish,
sure.
Yeah.
And then the band I'll never forget that was so friggin' good but never really broke was Guadalcanal Diary.
Huge.
They were awesome, man, and I had never heard of them in my life.
Yeah, that whole genre I mean, that's a whole other story, but yeah, you're talking like Watusi Rodeo from Guadalcanal. They were great. My daughter started listening to some, I guess it's like Paramore. Like Paramore, right? She probably loves it.
She loves them, yeah.
And I said, well, I need to make you some early stuff that kind of influenced this newer kind of Gwen Stefani, Paramore. And so I did. I did like Guadalcanal Diary. You remember like The Cure, Cult, Lemonheads, all that stuff we used to listen to up on the third floor with Mike Graff and Pat Heffernan and those guys, you know?
Right. So those guys got us into, like, early on, we were doing DJing WLUR. And Graff and Heffernan, I think they were program directors there. So I guess that was freshman year or maybe sophomore year, scored the like Sunday night like radio show.
Yes.
And we used to go up and violate, you know, college radio licensing things by drinking beer in the studio. And I mean, like in retrospect.
Do you have any of that? Do you have any of that audio?
I'm sure there's a cassette tape kicking around somewhere from some of those radio shows. But like
Go ahead.
No, I mean, like, I was definitely also real into, like, you know, which in retrospect is like cheesy rock from that period. You know, it was a cool like college radio time, but I also had those staples of like, you know, playing Motley Crue and like stuff you'd play every show, you know, like it was funny.
Bon Jovi, Kiss.
All right.
So that is kind of interesting. But one story I want to tell is WLUR Sunday night, you, Greg Golden, Mike Graff and Heffernan. And I was listening probably, it might've been second year. It might've been in my dorm, and they played some sort of country vamp with like banjos and stuff. And I just remember you were like, 1-2 down the middle, do-si-do, like that. And I just remember like Greg Golden like was laughing so hard he almost stopped breathing. You were just doing total improv, like auction caller mode.
Right.
It was so funny, man. So funny.
That is funny. So that's where we got to start in broadcasting, right? Back at WLUR, I think, had like a radius of like 2 miles because the school was also in the mountains, which didn't help a weak radio signal, you know?
Yeah, it was pretty much Lexington.
Yep, totally. All right, so then you kind of got into, you were in like a really early tech guy, kind of riding the wave of the first, like when AOL was growing and, you know, how did you get into that whole field and
spawn tech group
and everything?
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting. I always had a computer. My dad worked in the military, and then he worked for a contractor I had a computer, a compact computer when I was 15, 16 years old. I was always into it, but I literally found the internet at Shenandoah University in Virginia in 1992. I was up there with my girlfriend, now wife. She was going to college there, and I was at the library. And I found, like, you know, this was even kind of before AOL was big.
Right. But
just things like FTP and Gopher and all these kind of file sharing systems. And I started seeing topics that I was interested in. People were starting to put maps of hiking trails online. So I'd go and download them to my computer. And so that was kind of before the web.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the internet, for me, the World Wide Web really kind of hit 95 for me. And I started working at IBM. I started building intranets for their teams. And then I went to AOL in 96, started building digital magazines online, iGolf, like iSki, all these kind of mountain biking and snowboarding sites. And this was, again, like 1996.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like 3 people coming to the site.
And for people who don't remember, that was like, you guys were like the AOL keyword, right? Like you'd plug in like keyword snowboarding or something and you would generate content there, right?
Yeah, so there's a guy named Brian Henley. He went to Harvard University, and for his, I guess, graduate from business school, his whole paper or presentation was on creating sports communities on AOL.
Mm-hmm.
And so he actually got a grant through their greenhouse program to start this company called Interzine in 1996. And I think my one business partner was employee 3.
Right.
And I think I was maybe employee 10 or 12. And we grew it over 2 years, and then it eventually sold. And that was when the 3 of us started Tech Group, which was 1998.
Nice. And how did Tech Group start originally? Like who were your clients? What were you doing?
When Interzine got sold, they blew up a lot of people. And so a lot of people that myself and my 2 business partners had been the technical group developing and doing websites and database stuff for them, they all went all over the place because they either got fired or they got a severance and got laid off, or they took a payout and left or whatever it was. Immediately we started getting calls. Our first client was Ford Motor Company, who was someone we worked with at Interzine.
Right.
We started working with NCAA from someone at Interzine. So we just had these immediate connections. And we went into Ford as kind of consultants.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw immediately all the things we had been doing at Interzine could totally apply from snowboarding to automotive immediately. You know, they had press kits and press releases and photos and stories, and they needed a place to put those online.
Right.
And so that was really the start of what we created, was called an online newsroom, which is now kind of an industry product. And it's just a way for PR and marketing people to publish content. It's very basic and very simple, you know, like a WordPress.
Right.
But it's just so targeted towards PR.
That's cool. I mean, you guys came out of the gate with some big clients.
Ford kind of helped us get Delta. And then once we had 2 or 3, then we started getting. And the nice thing is we still have Ford.
Mm.
Ford is still our client after 22 years. And we started getting a lot of what started happening was people started seeing it.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
At a different level, for example, the NFL. They said, what about if we buy one newsroom and then use 30 of them for each of our teams? So that's, you know, 30 newsrooms for us.
Wow.
And then Dale Resorts has 15 different mountains. So we started seeing these hub and spoke type of models where we could build once and reuse a bunch of times. And that started taking us even to the next level. You know, we got NFL was 30 teams, MGM Resorts is 12 resorts. So it's like, instead of selling one newsroom, you're selling 12.
Right. That's pretty killer. How have the newsrooms like evolved over time as to like how the company, I mean, if they didn't have these things early on when you started offering this, like how has that evolved over time as to how they utilize it now?
Yeah, it's unbelievable the change. When we started, the audience for these things was 100% journalists, press. Mm-hmm. So it was newspapers, TV reporters, editors at magazines that needed stories from companies to fill their papers and to fill their TV stations. So 100% press releases going to 100% journalists. Now it's about 80% what we call news consumers, which is just you and me. I mean, anybody. So right. It's not like I'm a, you know, everyone reads press releases now because it's not really a press release. It's just a story about Ford or a story about Toyota. So it's totally changed. And social media 7-8 years ago allowed us to now distribute these stories via Twitter, Facebook, and every other social media platform. So now, instead of having to pay someone like a wire service to get your news story out, you just post it on your newsroom and then you can use social media and email to get it out there.
That's killer.
So saving a ton of money for companies.
Right. So basically it's evolved into its own whole new industry and distribution system for companies.
It is. We started, I always say, the online newsroom industry started with one client and one vendor. And now pretty much every company has an online newsroom of some sort. And I think we're up to 27 competitors that we have.
Wow.
So all the news wires started building them.
Right.
And then there's just small company after small company and all over the world that have started online newsroom companies because everyone really does kind of need one, especially now. You know, we're talking any crisis that happens with your company, you have to have a quick way to get the word out and get the message out. And believe it or not, a corporate website is not the easiest or quickest way to get content up because of the IT department and the red tape and the publishing requirements and all this stuff.
Right.
When we first started, if you had a change to the Ford Motor Company website, it took 2 weeks to get it from from submitting that piece of content to
right.
getting what they called, they rolled it from a development to a production environment. That rolling process took approval after approval after approval, and it was 2 weeks.
Wow.
And that was one of the reasons why we were able to say, how about 2 seconds?
Right.
You know, we can offer 2 seconds.
That's insane. That is
cool. Now it doesn't necessarily have as much of a impact because everyone can offer 2 seconds for publishing. But so we've had to adapt and we've had to expand, and it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And then what other like uses do companies have for this? Like, or does it help them track like effectiveness of advertising campaigns? Like I'm sure it's helpful in the sales world. Like what are the sort of how they implement these newsrooms now aside from just distributing information?
Right. There's three main pieces. One is just content management, which is bigger. You know, for example, say you're Detroit Lions. Imagine how much video and how many images you have after a game.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Detroit Lions can take all that video and all those images and very easily put it into their newsroom, and it's all there. So that's, you know, that's that example of using it as almost a digital asset warehouse.
Right.
There's also people that are using it for like hospitals. So, well, University Hospital is one of our clients. They'll use it to distribute information, but not necessarily via email or social. They just post it on their site and mm-hmm. then everyone links to it. So they've become kind of a resource for anything on diabetes or Parkinson's. They just crank story after story after story out, and then people find them on Google. And this hospital has become this kind of online resource,
wow.
which is totally, you know, helps their brand.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of ways. Crisis communications is one. also a product launch. Say you're Baskin Robbins and you have a new flavor coming out. It is so easy for you to, with our platform, one, go find every food and beverage writer, reporter, any food and beverage TV shows, any food and beverage radio shows, and then send them automated emails saying, here's some video for your TV, here's some audio for your radio, here's some story ideas for your magazine and newspaper. So that's all built into our platform where you kind of press a couple buttons and it just fires out everything very targeted. And then on the backside, what I think you were talking about is the third piece, which is monitoring. So now we can analyze and say, how many people came to the site? Did it hit our objectives? How many people bought our products after coming to the site? You know, how many times were we picked up in the newspaper? How many times were we mentioned on social media? And there's all sorts of analytics. So it's really a full circle from content creation, distribution, analytics.
That's really cool. That's insane. So you mentioned the crisis response, which obviously is very timely now, right? And one thing you're doing is you have a webinar kicking off Monday, March 30th at 12 noon, 24 hours, called the COVID Crisis Webinar, which people can find at that hashtag or at bit.ly/ COVID Crisis Webinar. So it's bit.ly/ COVID Crisis Webinar. No registration, no fee. Tell me a little bit about the webinar and then just generally what you guys are, how you're helping companies amid the crisis.
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy few days. We're an international company. We have clients in Australia. We have clients in Germany, Italy, everywhere. So literally every single one of our clients has been impacted by this recent virus. Mm. And so it's one of those things where we're trying to react and listen to what our clients are saying. And the first thing that I saw was really people are asking for help on a communications level. Mm-hmm. So they're saying, we were talking earlier, you know, you're a 25-year-old PR manager for a retail store and this happens and you're now in charge of employee communications, communicating with the media, talking with your customers,
right.
And, you know, so they need help.
Yep.
And from a communication standpoint. And so what I did was I just started reaching out to people and we've lined up about 30 speakers. I'm interviewing them and getting all their audio. And we're just going to give tips and strategies and examples to people from around the world that are looking for help in our industry. And so it's going to be, and I didn't know what time to do it. You know, people are saying 24 hours, a little overkill, but again, clients in Saudi Arabia, clients in Italy, clients in the UK. So I was just like, let's just roll this thing all day long. We'll repeat some stuff, obviously.
Right.
But I just didn't want to pick a time. And so, like you said, 12 o'clock noon on Monday, March 30th, East Coast time, and we'll just roll it for 24 hours.
That's cool. So then people, right, from all parts of the world can join in when it's convenient. Did you guys learn anything from other countries that maybe were impacted before the U.S. and then use that to see how to do things in the U.S. or is it all just been unfolding so rapidly that there's no even way to plan?
Right. I think it's funny because the people I'm talking to are helping me so much. I mean, I've never been obviously through anything like this and I'm in charge of communications for my company and right. We're a small company. So we pretty much can talk to each other on the phone or through email. You know, I'm not managing thousands of people. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine. The first thing that I think I am saying that I learned, or the first thing I saw, was the NBA commissioner, Adam Silver.
Right.
I mean, he stood up pretty quick and like shut things down.
Yeah.
And so I felt like he's a great example of just leadership saying, look, this is going to be inconvenient and this is going to really not be fun, but it's kind of obvious that we need to stop. And I think the way that everyone followed suit the next day, it was almost like everyone was waiting for someone. So, you know, I learned a little bit from him about don't shirk away from your employees or don't be afraid to reach out to your customers at this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's a good time to actually engage more with your employees and make them feel, you know, whatever's going on, at least let them know. And with our clients, we're fortunate. We're an online business. We have remote employees. Our clients are using our software right now, at least, you know, for the time being. And right. So we've been kind of lucky. I can't imagine so many friends I have that own bars and own restaurants. It's just, I just can't even imagine. Or like you and I are familiar with a band. I mean, if you're in a band, you're probably also a waiter or a bartender.
Right.
So you just lost both your streams of income.
Yeah, it's amazing, like, to see how bands are dealing in this time. I mean, like, before we hopped on the phone, I actually just saw, I was tooling around on Instagram, and we'll give them a shout out, at Sunshine Spaz. You know, just something popped up, and this band was in the middle of a rehearsal and just went live. So it was, like, cool to see, like, catch a quick little show. But, like, these are the kind of things, like, bands have to do, you know, is, like, a whole new world out there. Like, you know, how do you promote yourself, make money, you know, all those good things. I mean, yeah.
Like you said, Trey Anastasia is doing the Instagram videos, and I mean, there's no money there, but at least you're staying relevant. What music are you listening to these days? Do you have any kind of bands that are top on your list?
Yeah. I mean, being in Asbury Park is like, you know, so like 90s heyday of like alternative rock. You know, I was fortunate to be working in the city at that time, and you would go out every night. So like the major rock clubs, let's say like CBGB's, Mercury Lounge, Brownies, Wetlands, like, the list goes on and on. There were like just dozens of venues that would have bands from like, you know, probably like 7 p.m. to like 2 in the morning. So it would be like, you know, a lineup of just 10 bands playing like half hour sets, or, you know, good ones are getting 45 minutes or whatever. So you could go out like any night of the week and just pop in one of those places and see just absolutely sick live music. You know, you didn't even have to know anything about who was playing or anything like that.
Right.
Asbury in like a lot of ways is really reminiscent of that to me. There aren't as many clubs, but there's like, you know, on any given night, there's probably a good 4 or 5 places you could bounce around to and just see totally killer live bands, you know?
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, when I left Lexington and I went back to D.C. and I moved all over the place. Mm. And it wasn't until Ann Arbor where I found that.
Nah,
I was like,
yeah.
Sunday night, you know, 2 bands, 3 bands. Monday night, 3, 4 bands. Friday
right.
night, 6, 7 bands. Amazing.
Right.
And Charlottesville's like that. Charlottesville has seven days music. Well, used to.
Right. I mean, totally. We were fortunate, like, in college. Think of all the insane bands that were coming out. Because we were in that whole sort of, like, D.C. down to the Carolinas, like, was a heavy college touring circuit. And so many good bands coming. I mean, obviously, Dave Matthews being based out of Charlottesville
was
a big one. But so many good bands, like, on that whole circuit. It was insane, you know?
Isn't it funny, like, when we would see Hoi Polloi or the Megaphonics, and, like, we would idolize them and think it was so amazing. And now, I know you booked and I booked. It's not that hard to, like, call a social director for a fraternity and say, here's my band. Can you pay them? And,
right.
I mean, it's so funny how you think it's like, oh, my God, the Megaphonics.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, someone booked them and they're playing and they're good.
Right.
But it's like not that hard.
Well, I mean, our classmate Chris Owen tried to like basically leave school and go on the road with the Megaphonics.
He jumped in their van.
Like they sent him back, like, you know, they told him to go get some stuff. I think he ran back for his pillow and that's the that's all he wanted.
That's right. That's
he's
right.
ready to go on the road.
Hey, I got a question. What, give me one, like one of your best memories of freshman year.
Freshman year, like I just happened to be talking to someone recently, like, I mean, our our room was totally ridiculous. Like, one of the things that originally attracted me to Washington Lee is like, I was down there for, I at first thought I wanted to go to UVA, and then like a college, counselor told me, go check out WNL while you're down there. So my parents took me, like, you know, I guess it was junior year of high school or whatever. And obviously I saw the campus. I was like, ah, I love this place. But then I was out in the quad of Graham Lee's dorm, like after I had an interview or something. And I saw these two freshmen with like golf clubs, and they were chipping tennis balls like up into open dorm room windows. And I was just like, I love this place. this is where I want to go. I think this is where I need to be. So you and I like lucked out, and we were like right on the corner of that quad in like, you know, would a corner room. So it was bigger than most, like right in the middle of that action. And like when we first got there, I mean, our room was just music, like obnoxiously loud 24/7. You had a microphone hooked up to your stereo, so we'd like put a speaker out on the quad and like yell shit out into the quad and like talk to people when they were walking by. And, you know, I think some of those pranks early on were really funny, like, you know, locking the neighbor out of his room, and, you know, you'd climb in his window and use speaker cable and tie his doorknob to like the back of the room, then climb out the window and nail his shutter closed, you know, like, all those important things you learn.
The pranks were amazing. I mean, I think my favorite memory, it's funny, started at the beginning, was mine is has to be at the end that morning after that Zolman's party, and we woke up and dude, that hawk or whatever, that raven was just, that thing was huge. Just, I don't know how it got in, I guess through the window, and that thing was just circling us in our own room.
I mean, at that point, when that massive bird flew in through our window and like bounced off the wall right above my head, I just thought that was a sign of impending death and that we better get the hell out of here. Like, our time is up at this place right now. It's time to go home for the summer or something.
Yeah. I mean, our dorm room was basically just two mattresses and trash at that point. It's like we were hanging on because I didn't want to go back home.
Right.
You know, that freshman year was amazing.
And it was.
I knew that I was not going to have that at home.
That's still one of the amazing things, is that we got our deposit back. Because I was telling someone else recently too, it's like we just nailed a dartboard to the wall. Like, we didn't bother to put like things, you know, something to protect the wall and then put the dartboard on top of it. Like, we were total knuckleheads, you know, like.
Yeah, it was bad.
I almost moved out. You know, back in the day, you used to have those tall speakers. There was so much crap in the room that I almost left my speakers behind because I didn't see them. And they were probably like 3 feet tall, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was like, but that bird was just like the symbol. The other time I have that same memory was like leaving Mardi Gras. And I remember sitting in a car, like in the back seat of a car crammed with like a ton of people, leaving New Orleans for back to, you know, Lexington, Virginia, and just seeing the Superdome in the rearview mirror and just like never being so thankful that to see a city in your rear view before, like, I gotta get out of here, man. But yeah, that bird was crazy, like, symbolism. All right. So speaking of crises, what other, services are you offering to your existing, or I guess, you know, you talked a little bit about that, but what are you seeing your clients, like, how are they impacted by what's going on right now? Like, are there some that their business is completely wiped out? Like, they're shut down and have to shift gears and do something like, what are people doing differently? How are people reacting just from a business sense? If they're, you know, number one business is wiped out.
It's all over the map. We have some clients that are very happy with us right now because they're able to use our software to distribute whatever messages they need to.
Mm.
But we definitely have some clients. We have one that's in the real estate industry and one that's in the sports industry, and they make their money through real estate and sports.
Right.
And so, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, sometimes revenue, like, for example, some of the resorts or some of the travel companies, I mean, that revenue goes to zero. It's not like, you know, if you close your doors, it's not like it's a slow trickle of revenue. I mean, it just goes to zero. So that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fortunately we're an online company. our employees have worked from home, from, you know, they're able to work from home very easily, and our, and the software we have is good for this time, but, you know, obviously companies are struggling and they're not really, you know, they're not really making money.
Right.
So time will tell.
So do you have any, you told me, I don't know if you can talk about it specifically, but, like an online gambling client and how their business like basically evaporated because there's no sports, but then they pivoted to other areas. Like, do you have examples like that you can share?
Right, right. Yeah, like a company that would rely on sports betting or online gambling might, like we said, you know, they'll pivot to esports. Or I guess is the MMA, I think that MMA guy might still be trying to do things without an audience. So he's right. Like the only sport left. But yes, I mean, we've definitely had clients that have had to pivot like that where, you know, now your revenue from this source is kind of gone. We do a lot in the travel industry, MGM Resorts, Vail Resorts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they both closed. So, you know, their operations are closed, but their marketing and their PR and their crisis communications teams are obviously still working. And so those are examples where clients are using our software. You know, for it's perfect for that.
Right.
But definitely it's going to be tough. I mean, we're always keeping an eye on everything from our standpoint. And so far we've been fortunate, but you know, who knows how long it'll last. And we do have a lot of travel and sports clients. And so they're definitely being impacted.
Right. Yeah. It'll be a different landscape once this is all over. I mean, you know, it's going to be survival of the fittest for sure. And then, you know, it's not going to be business as usual for a while either. You know, because how quickly are people going to start traveling? And Vail, like, they have to wait another season anyway, you know, like, so they're a long way off before they can, you know, have some income and stuff. What about on the Charlottesville scene? Like, what are some, I know you've told me about a lot of restaurants and breweries and things that are, I imagine, are all shut down. What are some of those businesses doing to survive right now?
Yeah, the biggest adaptable that I've seen in that is the to-go.
Yeah.
A lot of people shut down for a week and then they said, wow, you know, we can't do this. So they're starting to do curbside pickup type things, or they put your order out on a table and you come pick it up, or, you know, it's kind of carry out. And our community is great. You know, Charlottesville is a great town. And we actually are even a little west of Charlottesville in a place called Crozet, which is even a nice, even a kind of smaller, more close-knit community.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone's supporting each other and trying to do what they can, but we have a lot of breweries here. So that industry, kind of that event, you know, not many, you know, no one's planning wedding receptions and things like that. And
right.
So that industry, I think that's a tough one.
Yep. That is tough. I mean, weddings are basically off.
Yeah. Weddings, graduation parties.
Right.
Any sort of rehearsal dinner type operation, you know, those are shut for the foreseeable future. And so if you're an event planner or if, you know, even everything from like, if you're a florist,
right.
If you're a florist and you make flowers for graduation and weddings and stuff, I mean, you have to adapt.
Right. It's true. Yeah. Not to be morbid, but even florists, like, they're really, funerals are cut down. You know what I mean? Like, they're doing that online now. It's really weird.
Yeah. Everything.
Yeah. All right. So on a personal side, you've gotten into coaching, which we should give you some props, like your sports background. You're the holder of several WNL baseball records. Do you know off the top of your head what they are?
I just switched from my microphone, so let me know if it doesn't sound good.
No,
I think
cool.
It's down to one. Strikeouts, most strikeouts in a game.
How many was that?
Which was crazy because it was a doubleheader.
Right.
And in college, when you play doubleheaders, you only play 7 innings. So it was 2 7-inning games. I threw the first game, and I had 16 strikeouts out of 21.
No
so
way.
That was pretty good.
That's cool.
And that's it. I had another couple, but there's been some young guys come up.
Right.
But, yeah, coaching has been amazing. I mean, when I stopped playing sports, you know, I played – you know, you did kind of too, right? I mean,
yep.
I started playing sports when I was 5 years old.
Right.
Soccer and t-ball. And then at WNL, you know, I was done there at what, 20, uh-huh. 21. And that the competitive fire and all of that, I missed it so much. And so when my girls were born and we started geez, they started the same thing. My oldest started playing when she was five. So I've been coaching two sports a year for 13 years.
Wow. And then you're in high school coaching now, right?
Yes, I coached. It's funny. I'll tell you a good story. and then we might have to wrap up after that.
All right, cool.
But yes, absolutely. I started with like travel soccer or travel softball, middle school volleyball. Then I started coaching my daughter high school field hockey. So I kind of moved up there. I coached high school tennis, and then now I'm high school football defensive backs coach.
Nice.
And so, yeah, this is a good one. First day practice, I'm in charge of there's seven coaches. The other six are all teachers, and they've all played football. Some of them played in college. Some of them even played in like the AFL and world leagues and arena leagues.
Oh, wow.
They're all like X's and O's geniuses.
Right.
And I don't know anything. You know what I mean? I know the game, but I don't know how to coach football.
Right.
And so I go out there. He's like, Coach Mamarella, you're in charge of the punt. He's like, simple drill. This guy punts it, and then there's a line of kids that catch it, and the one guy catches it, and then he runs it back to the punter. Very simple. I was like, I got it. No problem. So first guy punts it, and the kid in line kind of puts his hand up, and he's kind of struggling with the sun a little bit, and like putting his hand over his eyes, and then he ends up muffing it.
Right.
And he's like, Coach, the sun. And I totally took charge. I go in there and I'm like, stop the drill. Let's flip it around. Punter go this side. Other guys go this side. So we're not in the way of the sun.
Right.
And the head coach, I mean, full sprint was like, do you need me to order you up some clouds? Is that what you're telling me? You want some clouds? You want me to call the big man in the sky and tell him we can't play if there's sun out? And I was like, oh my God, like what is going on here? I mean, just crushed me. And it was just like, I learned real quick that when you coach girls, you can do that. But for some reason, when you coach boys, you're just different. You have to be hard and firm, and they can't catch the ball, then they get in the back of the line.
Right.
We're not going to change the drill for you. But I was just like, wow,
that's pretty funny.
This is football. And I mean, there's so many stories where I just,
sorry, sir, it's a little sunny, we're gonna turn around.
He was like, do you want me to order you some clouds? He was just crushing.
That's awesome.
And then another one, if we have 2 seconds, was Oklahoma drill, which is basically prison.
I remember that one. It's like a circle, right?
And two dudes just try to kill each other until one dude's laying on top of the other, pinned down, and it's over.
Right.
And so I'm sitting there, and it was my first day, and I'm like, okay, circle up, let's do Oklahoma drill. I had no idea what it was. I'm like, these two guys go out there. I'm like, all right, let's go, cool. And they start going, and one guy's just destroying the other dude, folding him in half and slamming him. And then everyone's cheering. It was like Gladiator.
Right.
And so they're like, Coach Mamarella, you got to film this so we can put it on social media. Dude, I had already taken 3 steps back from the whole circle and was puking.
Right.
Like my stomach and my stomach and chest were like pounding, dude. Because I was like, how can these guys do this to each other? This is insane. Like insane.
So I am curious, how is it that you ended up like a D-back coach? And so why weren't you coaching baseball? Was it just that's what it was? More it like was, your interest or was available or what?
Yeah, no, I did. I coached baseball in the spring.
Oh, okay.
And football's in the fall.
Gotcha.
So what happened was I coached field hockey with my daughter.
Uh-huh.
And then once she got up to a certain level in high school, like I didn't want to be her head coach where she was playing. That was just kind of a weird thing. I don't think the athletic director would want that either.
Right.
And so I switched to football.
Gotcha. That's
so, yeah, cool. I had no experience. I had like 12 years with girls, and now this is my third year with boys. But I mean, it's night and day. I mean, you can't cuss in front of girls.
Right.
And the other thing too, it's hard to even slap a high five with a girl.
Right.
With these boys, it's like, if they make a good play, I'm like, I'm full on like jumping into their arms, like hugging them and stuff.
Right. I mean,
it's like such a different thing.
You see coaches like, you get fired up, you start headbutting kids with helmets on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have to tell you, there's nothing like being a DB coach in a big game with, obviously there's maybe a couple thousand people in the stands, but it feels like 100,000, and your guy makes like an interception or something. I mean, you just want to like go tackle them yourself because right. you're so happy.
That's awesome. So do you show these kids like old primetime Dion videos and stuff? Show them how to like return it in style?
Absolutely. I have three. I do Ronnie Lott.
Right. Nice. Ronnie's a badass.
And then I do Daryl Green.
Yeah. Nice.
And then I do Dion. So that's they cool. don't know him. You know, they don't know any of those guys. Right. They know, well, for UVA, a lot of the kids on the team are UVA. So there's that guy. Is it Justin Thornhill? I think his name is Kansas City. He was a Super Bowl champion and he played at UVA. So a lot of the kids love him.
Right.
And then, you know, it's hard. A lot of guys like that Richard Sherman guy, you know him?
Yeah.
I think it's, he was all over the place, Seattle or Green Bay. So yeah, they don't know the old guys.
Right.
We joke about that as coaches because, you know, we'll be like, oh, you do that one just like Roger Staubach. And they're like, what? Like, who's that?
Right.
They don't even know Troy Aikman.
Oh, you know? I'm sure. Yeah, it's crazy.
They just know Prescott. They know Prescott, Dallas Cowboys.
Wow.
They don't know any of them. They don't know Danny White.
Right.
You know, they don't know Joe Theismann.
Nah.
They don't know him. They just don't know him.
That's amazing. The kids in Charlottesville like the Redskins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're really, really big on UVA.
Yeah.
I mean, UVA football almost is bigger than Sunday Redskins, I would say. But yeah, there's a lot of Redskins.
Cool.
A lot of Nationals fans.
Right. Was it disappointing for UVA fans with hoops canceled March Madness? Did they have high expectations with March Madness this year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what an incredible story to lose that first round 1-16 and then win the tournament the next year. So that was just a huge story. But
right.
yeah, I think they were peaking at the right time. They started off slow. They got a young team. But they were peaking to where, you know, they were kind of scooting in there to where, you know, they were kind of bubble for a while. Then they're like, oh, they're in. And then they're like, maybe they're a Sweet 16 here. So I think next year they're going to be real good.
Yeah.
If, you know, depending on what happens. But,
right.
I mean, there's a chance that if all the seniors flow through, they'll be real good. If they redshirt, you know, if some of those seniors come back a year, then they'll still be good. But
right.
I think they're, you know, they got some good freshmen coming in. But, yeah, Charlottesville was a big sports town. Lacrosse, girls soccer is massive here.
Mm.
Lacrosse is massive here.
Right.
Massive.
That's cool. Good deal. All right. We'll get wrapping up. Any Charlottesville band we should be on the lookout for?
I have two. My favorite Charlottesville band is Sons of Bill. You'd like them. They're kind of little country, about like kind of like that stuff that I like where it's rock and roll, but it's still a little country.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would have to say the best band around here in the Richmond area, Charlottesville area, is called Wrinkle Neck Mules. They're an awesome band. Check them out on Spotify, Wrinkle Neck Mules. They probably have 10 albums. They're awesome.
I feel like I've seen them before. Yeah, that sounds
familiar. They play all over, but they're a real good band.
That's
real
cool.
Good. They have two lead singers, so like every other song's totally different feel and voice, but it works.
That's awesome. All right, I'll shout out my one of my favorite Asbury bands, Well Wisher. Check them out. They're actually signed to a Richmond label and have been on the Mullet Cast, so give them a spin. They got some killer tunes. All right, so we'll check in the Tech Group webinar once again, the COVID crisis webinar. Just look for that hashtag COVID crisis webinar and get yourself on it, bit.ly/COVID crisis webinar on Monday beginning at 12 noon. You want to give a little preview of anyone we should look for that's going to be on that? You'll be on there, I take it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be hosting. It's a 24-hour webinar, and it's really for PR managers, communications professionals, maybe marketing professionals, people that are in this communications industry. I've tried to assemble, you know, from my 26 years of experience in this industry, some leaders. So we have companies like people from Ford Motor Company, Arc'teryx, some kind of company levels.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have some universities, University of Michigan, Western Kentucky. And then at the next level, I just have speaker after speaker of names like Deirdre Breckenridge, Scott Monty. These are all just industry leaders in PR and crisis. So I've got about 30. And so anybody that just is, like I keep saying, if you're a 25, 26-year-old, you know, PR manager,
mm-hmm.
and you're working for a bagel company in New York City. I mean, what are you doing right now? You can't just go dark. You have to communicate with your employees. You have to communicate with the world. You have to communicate with the media.
Right.
And so a lot of people are asking for help. And what do I say? How do I do it? What tools can I use? So we're just trying to put all that together.
That's cool. Awesome. All right, Steve, thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot.
Totally appreciate it. Once again, Steve Mamarella. Follow, check out Tech Group at TechGroup.com. Any social accounts you want to throw out real quick?
Yeah, at Online Newsroom is a Twitter one. At Online Newsroom. And then at Mamarella is my personal one. But at Online Newsroom is where we're going to be posting all the webinar stuff here in the next couple of days.
Cool. You find Twitter is still like one of the bigger outlets for distributing news?
Yeah, I think for us, it's great. I mean, we don't use social media. You know, in the very beginning, people would say, you're not using it the way you're supposed to, but we use it for distribution. So all of our clients' content, videos, photos, press releases, press kits, bios, whatever, as soon as they post it, it goes out to our Twitter distribution network, which is about 300,000. You know, and a lot of those are journalists and TV stations that are following. So we've seen Twitter that way. I'm using LinkedIn now for my more kind of my Facebook, you know,
right.
That's why I post my stories. That's why I talk to people. I do a lot of messaging there. I'm not using a lot of Facebook, and I do some Instagram, but not really.
Right.
Twitter and LinkedIn are, for me as a communications professional, those are my two.
So PR pros aren't like picking up TikTok these days.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you should.
You got to have a presence everywhere, like, I guess, right?
Yeah. I mean, how many can you do? And it's right. I've still struggled with Instagram because I just don't see a lot of breaking news and like news on Instagram. But on TikTok, I think I could do, you know, where both of us, you know, the video and the podcast and the maybe little short little snippet videos. But, you know, who's my audience? My audience are right now in my industry, people that I'm selling my software to or trying to communicate with. It's definitely not, you know, 13-year-old girls.
Right.
So, but it's big. I would say it's next, right? I mean, it seems like TikTok is the next, I guess, Instagram.
Right.
Or the next Snapchat.
Right, right. Totally.
But I love LinkedIn. Do you, I mean,
I got to step up. Yeah, I got to step up my game on there. Like Gary Vee obviously is always all over LinkedIn. And so once he started talking about that, I started paying a little bit more attention, but I got to get back there. It makes sense.
You know where it's huge for you is finding guests.
Totally.
So just go out there and say, okay, I want to talk about, you know, automotive industry today in New Jersey.
Yep.
And just type that into LinkedIn and find some connections. And then, I mean, that's, you should be able to find a ton of guests.
That's a really good one.
Especially, you know, radio type guests, not in person, but like I'm finding for this webinar, I'm communicating with people in Italy and South Africa and stuff totally on LinkedIn.
That's cool.
So it's really cool.
I have noticed like a good number of fellow podcasters out there will reach out. You know, I think that's another thing, like podcasters tend to make the circuit of like appearing on each other's podcasts. So you'll get that a lot through LinkedIn, which is cool, you know?
Definitely. I mean, it's a network. So, yep. I mean, yeah, but you could expand it for you. You could say search for real estate pros and then find people. Maybe they're not even in New Jersey, but they could offer advice to people like yourself or whatever, you know? So I think LinkedIn for you, for, you know, it's kind of like lead generation almost for you, you know, finding guests.
Absolutely.
And then also obviously publishing your content, but I like your Instagram stuff though. I think that's a good little niche. As long as you can just get more people following you and liking you and stuff like that.
Right.
That format seems to work.
Yep. I like Instagram for the one drawback to it as far as promoting a podcast is like you don't have a clickable link in your little story. You know, people have to go to your bio and that stuff. But it is, you can get out little snippets and short videos. And then Instagram TV is a way to get out some video footage. But, you know, it's cool. Awesome. All right, Steve, thanks for coming in. Once again, check out me on Instagram at Evan Balmer, and Steve will catch up with you again soon.
Thanks, Evan. It was great catching up with you, and good talking to you as always. Good luck with the new podcast studios, and be speaking with you soon.